From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio with Wispar, the mobile app that keeps you up to date with grassroots football in Cambridgeshire. To find out more, visit wispar.com.
Welcome to From the Pavilion this evening. It's been a pretty quiet week of cricket, so we're going to start with a song.
We would love to give every one of our fans a night to remember.
It's coming home, it's coming home.
The World
home.
Cup.
It's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming.
There he goes.
It's
coming. That's a winning shot.
It's coming home, 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 it's coming. Rick, it's coming home.
Everyone. We've seen England before, pushing ones, what a bore. But one day Strauss, he shared his big dream to create a new team with attack as a theme. And now we're singing three lions and a crown. Captain Morgan's England. Johnny and J. Roy start the fun with Root and Just to come. Bounties flow, watch and go. And then they're followed by Stokes, Woody, Willie and Woz, Rush and Plunkett and Moe. And they're all singing three lines and a frown. Captain Morgan's England.
Yes, so England were World Cup champions. They defeated New Zealand on the weekend in the most dramatic circumstances, probably the best one-day fixture ever in the history of the game. So welcome to From the Pavilion. Myself, Ollie Slack, is here with you this evening for the next hour. And then Alex Sears will, fingers crossed, be joining us. He's running a little bit late, probably because of the traffic on Mill Road. And, of course, that was the song Three Lions and a Crown, released before actually England won the World Cup. In hope they did, and they did incredibly. And, of course, we're not going to bash the hell out of that song all night. But if you want to have your say on England's World Cup victory, then you can do. You can get in touch on 07919 070490 and talk to the devil. Alex Sears just arrived now, so he's getting himself a drink and he'll be in the studio in just a bit. But if you head over to Twitter page, you can have your say as well. We said last week in a poll, which would you rather win if you're an England fan, the World Cup or the Ashes? And 62% voted for the World Cup. Well, thank God you did, because England were victorious on Sunday evening. And now at the top of our Twitter page, at @FTPCricket_105, we're asked, have the ECB made the right call by downgrading the county fifth ever competition for the 100 next season? Of course, a bit of news on that today. And right on cue, Mr. Alex Sears has joined us in the studio.
Hello.
Alex, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Apart from Cambridge traffic, all good.
Mill Road?
Yeah, all good. It's just Mill Road. Had to abandon the car and run here.
Did you?
Luckily, my fitness isn't quite where Stokes's is, but...
Well, I was going to say, last time you were on the show, you got a parking ticket, or no, a fine, didn't you, when you dropped me off in Cambridge, and if you've dropped your car off and ran it, you might get another one.
I did check. Good. Yeah, it should be fine. Permit only after six, before six, so it should be fine.
Okay, it's an expensive gig this for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Not giving you a lift again, though.
I'll give you a lift this time, though. So, the World Cup on Sunday, I guess it's the only place to start then. Where were you watching it? How were you watching it? What were you doing?
I was at home. I just literally watched it from 10 o'clock and I was still had it on at 9 o'clock in the evening. So it was brilliant. I've never acted like that in my own living room or even when I was a child with my parents there. So I was doing handstands, forward rolls over the... My little puppy was losing it. He couldn't cope.
Family there, friends there?
No, it was just me and my wife and the dog, really. I wanted to get to the game, but... Couldn't get there. I tried to pull some strings, but I couldn't in the end.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go, but fortunately enough, I was there.
Oh, were you?
Yes, but I put in almost probably a year ago now to be a volunteer at the World Cup and obviously put Lords as the venue to get in the incredible media centre and managed to get there. Yeah, it was just remarkable. When it went to a Super Over, the England media guy who was filming it all, like, it's one of these just small little cameras next to me. I said to him, I said, oh yeah, what happens, by the way, if it is a draw? And he went, I don't know. And then obviously must have realised it was a Super Over, and he said, oh God, my heart can't take a Super Over. But yeah, remarkable.
It was about halfway through when Butler and Stokes started putting a partnership together. I thought this is going to be a tight game. And I thought to myself, what happens if it's a tie? I thought back in the day when I used to do ties, it was a good old bowl off. And then I remember the Super Over. And then they mentioned it on Sky, by the way, about 20 overs in, it would be a Super Over. And then I thought, you know, club cricket used to do it on wickets as well, and maybe, I'm not sure international was, and they would have beaten us on that. So the fact that we hit more fours, New Zealand deserved, in my opinion, they deserved to win. They played better all day, I thought, you know, the cricketing gods just weren't with them. I don't think. I think we were lucky with everything, so many things. But yeah.
Cruel game. Let's review the game then. Bit of housekeeping before we just talk about all the emotions and all the other stuff. New Zealand put 241 on the board, lost 8 wickets. They got off to, I guess, a decent start. They were 103 for 1 off about 20 odd overs, and then England reeled them in and restricted them only to 248. So what were your thoughts at that point?
Well, when they were 100 for 1, I was, well, like everyone, I was thinking we need a wicket here, and I think Williamson and Nichols actually made it. They batted really well on it. I thought the England boys bowled quite well. They bowled a lot. In the first match at Lords against Australia, they bowled a bit short and they bowled a bit fuller and started picking up wickets. But they batted so well. When we picked up, we just got the reliable Plunkett in, didn't we? And he just takes wickets. And I do think he's up there with one of our best ODI bowlers of all time in terms of he's just a workhorse and puts the effort in the middle overs rather than, you know, the wicket takers tend to be the death bowlers and the new ball bowlers. Mm. But he's just brilliant. He's been our rock for the last few years.
Yeah, and England pretty much closed the innings out fairly well as well. None of the tail really wagged too much for it to give England any concern.
Poor old de Grandhomme. he got a peppering, didn't he, from Wood and
Jofra.
Wood and Jofra Archer, yeah.
Yeah, and so England 240, New Zealand 241 on the board. England probably pretty happy, I imagine, at that stage, despite obviously knowing that the pitch wasn't easy to bat on. But England, I guess, got off to a usual decent start with Roy and Bairstow. But when I was watching it, it was always difficult because I was right sitting by the photographers looking after them. It was always a difficult angle. But one thing you'd notice, obviously, was that England's openers and top order seemed to play and miss a lot more than New Zealand batsmen. What were you thinking at that stage when they were sort of crawling along? I think Joe Root was one off 22 balls at one point.
Yeah, I thought there was a bit of nerves from the England boys in there, but also you've got to admire the New Zealand bowlers at that stage, you know, the highest pressure, and they really bowled so well. The only reason, like, Bolt went at, you know, he went for a 60 or 70 in the end. But he bowled beautifully at the start. He looked like getting a wicket every ball when he's bowling at Roy and Bairstow. And when it's swinging late, Roy and Bairstow with their hard hands, I thought one of them was going to be LBW or bowled. But they managed to sort of get through that. But they just seemed to move it around more. Even my wife, who's not really a biggest fan of cricket, who was forced to watch it that day, she said, why are they moving it more than our bowlers did? And whether they're, you know, Henry's a little bit slower, although Wokes is a similar pace. I don't know, but they were moving everywhere. Mm. De Grandhomme was, get him to Cambridge Cricket Club on it. He's the perfect club bowler. He just bowls an area. He could have the keeper up. He'd score a lot of runs, whack a lot of runs. He's the man. He was brilliant.
Yeah. 10 overs, 25 runs, 2 maidens, going at 2.5, just a 1 wicket. Yeah, was brilliant in those middle overs for New Zealand. And Josh Butler and Ben Stokes were at the crease. And And I guess the benefit of it only being 2-4-1 is that they could afford to tick it around and knock it around a bit and try and, you know, relieve some of the pressure and get ones and twos and try and edge towards the total.
It felt a lot more like a club, not with regards to the standard of bowling, but the club, like your club game, where you feel that you could feel the tension building, you feel the run rate building. Like if I was batting, I'd be feeling right. Nervous. This is going up to 6 and over and 7 and over. At the start, it was a way that Root hasn't played, and Bairstow, they were just dotting up, and that shows in the way that we ended up winning. Is that I think New Zealand actually batted better in terms of they were knocking the ball around, scoring ones more regularly, and they scored the same total, even though we scored about 7 or 8 more boundaries than them, and it shows that we were almost. Bairstow was block, 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 and waiting for that bad ball, but it wasn't coming. And I was desperate for them to just rotate it. And then when Butler came in, he just, from the word go, made it look easy. And he started knocking it. And whether, I think the ball was a bit softer, so it wasn't doing as much. But and also, Butler's just brilliant. But
does help.
He was just knocking it around. I mean, they're all brilliant, but he just made it look easier. Yeah, Stokes needed 30 balls to get in as well. Yeah, Butler was just knocking it around, ones and twos straight away, and then putting the bad ball away. And I felt a bit better when he was in, but you just knew that if one of those was out, it was going to become difficult. And the run rate kept rising.
Yeah, it was almost a similar game to that one of Sri Lanka, where obviously when Butler went as well, it was then all on Stokes.
Yeah.
That Sri Lanka game, at one stage, even though when Mark was up the other end and he had to survive one ball off the end of the over, you felt sort of in control with Stokes. He came much on the wicket and hit a couple of six in that Sri Lanka game, but unfortunately, Mark Wood couldn't survive. I still felt when Stokes was there that we had a chance. He was in control. And to do that in the highest pressure situation must have been just
I backed Woody as well. He's actually one of my mates. And I backed him because I played against him in the 17s and he batted 3 and hit some of the best shots I've ever seen under 17s age group. But he was also the quickest bowler we faced at that time. But he's a good batter, and actually he needed a straight in that Sri Lanka game. He needed a straight ball because he was right. He was thinking, right, I need to block the straight one, make sure it doesn't hit my stumps, get into the next over. And actually, the bowler bowled it a bit wider, and he nicked off. But that was disappointing then. But once again, I was thinking about this the other day as well with Stokes. He's constantly there this tournament, which has made him the player which I think we wanted Flintoff to be when he was around. Flintoff always. I mean, he played some match-winning knocks, but Stokes is trying to take it deep now, which is the difference between, you know, good players and great players. And he's taking it right to the end. And I thought, again, I thought we were going to lose at the end when we still needed 50 off 6 overs, or and then we needed, you know, 15 off the last. I thought Stokes can't be there at the end again. Like Stokes, they hit those 4 sixes off him 2 years ago in the T20.
Tables are
turned. I can't imagine if he was in there again and we lost. I don't know how they'd pick him up. But it was just brilliant. You couldn't have written the whole game. It was so tense.
No, incredible. And looking at the scorecard on BBC Sport, it literally looks like a 4-day game because you've got 4 sets of innings because of the super over.
Yeah.
So when obviously Mark Wood being run out, I think on the last ball, like he was 240. One all out, goes to a super over. Ben Stokes volleys his bat towards the pavilion. Who are you thinking sending in? Because I guess imagine you look at it and you probably say someone like Roy Butler, but I can't imagine Stokes walked back in that pavilion didn't say, I want to be out there to win this game.
Well, I heard Stokes talk about it and he actually said he needed 5 minutes in the sort of shower room on his own because he was so annoyed that they hadn't won. So then someone needed to calm him down in the middle overs. And I think I initially thought Roy, because he just whacks it, really, you know, he can whack it. But then you've got to look at the guys who he'd been sitting there for 3 hours watching, and you're completely out of the game. Whereas, so I did think Roy initially, but then you start thinking who's been doing well, and it had to be those two in the end. And I heard Morgan was saying they liked the left hand right hand combination. And actually, batting 3 was going to be Morgan because they picked the short side they picked the leg side for the left hander was shorter, so they would have sent him in at 3. But it was just unbelievable.
I guess you also got to think of sort of pace as well, because a lot of the runs, if you think how many runs the Super over, a lot of them were quick singles or quick twos and threes that you pick up as well. So if someone like, I guess, Bairstow is wrapped between the wickets as well, but like you mentioned, that left hand is the shorter boundary. We also didn't mention, how could we not, the overthrows. The five and six runs.
I've never seen. That just, it happens really rarely in cricket.
Did you feel it was going to be our day when that happened?
I thought we've got
to
win
three
it
from
here.
Three from two.
I know, but then he just didn't want to hole out. He got two leg side balls after that, didn't he? And he didn't want to hole out because usually he'd have probably whacked them, but because he had, you know, it got to that stage, he had to keep it on the ground and keep us in the game. And even, you know, the standard of fielding from New Zealand as well, to get those two run outs in a row, that's what you train for. If we do it as club players at training, the ones that they've got in there are our perfect ones, and they, you know, and we'd be absolutely over the moon in that in training.
Can you imagine the pressure, Trent Bolt, when that ball's coming towards him, and he just, the stumps are on next to him, he's got to take it cleanly.
He actually, for the Rashid, I saw that there's a little ICC have done a video of it, which I've watched about 100 times now over the last few overs. And his pickup of that throw is a half volley, and it's as hard as it comes. They're just brilliant, and then. It shows that they'd been in the field a while, because they picked them up, run them out, and then in our super over when Joffa was bowling, there was that misfield from Roy, and
yeah.
Oh, that was I just thought, it's not our day then. I mean, the roller coaster of emotions going through the game, it was unbelievable.
And then when Roy, I think it was Roy, then he cleanly picked it up to run out poor old Gupta. It was here. Josh Butler, and that ball's coming towards him. Like he said, I think John of Agnew asked him afterwards, how did you feel? And he sort of played it down and said it was fairly simple, but he must have been feeling a bit of pressure on that ball.
Yeah, he was lucky that Roy got the throw perfect. He got it, you know, so it lands in at waist high. I mean, it could have been a little bit closer to the stumps, but he had enough time. But everyone knew it was out. You've seen by the reactions, and my reaction when I was watching it live, and we knew it was out. And you just can't believe that you have a tie and a tie, and New Zealand still come out with nothing, and England win because of boundaries scored. And I think,
fair.
I think it's nice sort of icing on the cake for the England side that have built for the last few years on scoring boundaries, and it's sort of. I mean, everything's worked our way. We've been really lucky. In, you know, another tournament, when they write down the rules, they probably barely think about that when they're writing the rules out. Oh, boundary scored, okay. Or wickets, all right, we've done, you know, get to get to the pub now. But that's just massive. And they actually haven't lost on the day, New Zealand. They Kane Williamson uses the word a lot, to scrap. And they scrap the whole time. And actually, that's what England did really well, and they started doing well in the last couple of years, rather than just blazing it all the time, scrapping their way to totals, which is something that us club cricketers need to do a bit more of, definitely us at Cambridge.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more Cambridge later on. And obviously, I was there, but rather than hear me listen to me bore on about my experiences sitting next to the photographers, let's talk to a man who was also at Lord's on the weekend, Foxhands and Cambridgeshire's Craig Park. Craig, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, good, thank you.
So let's talk Sunday then. And I mean, obviously, an incredible day for English cricket and English sport. But just talk about the atmosphere in the stadium at the time, because I imagine if you probably think of Lord's, you probably don't think of the most raucous atmospheres, but it was certainly rocking on the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody was just sort of really psyched up about the fact that England could actually, you know, be world champions. And yeah, everyone was on the edge of their seat singing, and 26,000 people rooting for England. So yeah, it was very, very raucous, and thankfully they were on the winning side in the end.
Yeah, and also there was obviously the confusion and the about the super over and the tie. And how was the atmosphere at that point, when I guess people weren't completely sure what was going on and they were being told as the game was going?
Well, after the actual innings had completed, thankfully the stadium announcer sort of gave everybody a rundown as to what would happen going into super over. And I mean, I suppose people weren't sort of expecting the super over to be a tie as well. But yeah, at the end, sort of judging by England's reaction, everybody kind of knew, well, they were world champions. So yeah, no, it all went well.
Yeah, and for you as well, someone who works at Lords, what was it like personally to, I guess, imagine a lot of planning has been going into this event for so many years, and it all, you know, coming together on Sunday in such a brilliant showpiece occasion, you know, perfect weather, perfect occasion. How did it feel when, I don't want to say when it was all over, but I imagine you were able to relax a bit afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it was really good to be a part of everything. Yeah, there's a lot of planning that went into it. We were in meetings with ICC from sort of the end of last year, getting each individual's roles as to what they were going to be doing. So yeah, I mean, it felt like we were all part of the team. And you know, when everything had finally come to an end, it was, I mean, it's a short time to relax because we go straight into the Ireland Test match, and we've got some T20s coming up as well. So a very quick turnaround time, not too much time to sort of relax. But glad everything sort of went well. Everything went according to plan. No real hiccups or anything. And yeah, we move on to the next big thing.
Yeah, of course. And it all went very smoothly. I think Lords was awarded the best rating out of all the grounds in terms of how it was organised and how the events took place. And I spoke to you on Saturday, actually, before the match day minus one, before the game, and you were organising the net bowlers. Did you ever get the shades off and have a little bit of the bowl at the England or New Zealand players?
No, thankfully I got enough people in to do that job for me. It's much better standing at the back of the nets watching them run in and bowl.
You know, to have a bowl.
Yeah, no, I think I'll just stick to fielding.
I'm sure you'd love to have a bowl at them, though.
No, I'm past that stage. No, I don't want them to sort of dent my confidence. So, no.
I'm actually going to Lords on Wednesday, I think, as an MCC member. So looking forward to that.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we'll pop into the academy at some stage and come say hello.
Although I was digging around for my MCC book this morning, and I think I need to make a short-term request for one again. I can't find it, so I need to have a look.
I better get onto that quickly then.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Craig. Thanks for coming on the show and sharing your experiences from what was an incredible day on Sunday.
Thanks very much.
Cheers. Craig Park there, Foxton and Cambridgeshire cricketer. He works at Lords. Saw him on Saturday. He was getting ready the net bowlers who were having the chore of being smacked around by England and New Zealand's players and organising that. And of course, it all went very smoothly. But I think there was possibly one streak who tried to encroach on the pitch at one point during the match, but not as bad as the England New Zealand game at Durham, for sure. Right.
At Lords, you'll be taking be put in the dungeons.
Deep down underneath the pavilion, I'm sure, yeah. Right, we'll go to some ad breaks because we're slightly late on that, and then we'll come back, and I think we'll probably talk a bit more about England New Zealand on Sunday. We're not overplaying that song, Alex. We're not overplaying the song.
I just had it on in the car on the way.
You what?
I had it on in the car on the way.
Of course, England did bring it home. They brought the trophy to the Oval as well, actually, to show a bunch of kids and the All-Stars. And annoyingly, I was actually in London that day for my sister's graduation, and we were about 5 minutes away from the Oval, and I saw the tweet at like 11 o'clock. They were there at half 10, but it was far too late to go down. We're already in the ceremony. And
yeah, you couldn't jump ship then on
no,
your sister.
No, well, I tried. Moving on to a bit more of a bigger debate about the final as a whole, and talk about free-to-air and the platform. Before we do, let's hear that final bit of commentary when England managed to secure the Cricket World Cup.
England have won it in the most dramatic circumstances. England will lift the World Cup after a super over.
And then this was what Owen Morgan had to say after the match, speaking at the press conference, which I managed to sneak into the back of as well.
To me and to the team and everybody who's been involved over the last 4 years, it means absolutely everything. The planning, hard work, the dedication, the commitment, and the little bit of luck really did get us over the line. It's been an absolutely incredible journey.
A little bit of luck, a number of, I'm sure, pieces of luck, but he wouldn't like to say that. England, thoroughly deserving, he says, and we all nod, of the Cricket World Cup on Sunday. So, Alex, let's talk then about the, like I said, the platform that England and the ECB need to build from here. 8 million watched it on the telly. I imagine that's across by Sky and on free-to-air, which was on Channel 4 and More 4. The scenes in Trafalgar Square was something similar of a football match, which you saw in the World Cup last year. Incredible. And, of course, then, as I said earlier, all those kids at the Oval on the Monday morning. What needs to happen now? Well, what do you think England and the ECB need to do to ensure that we don't pass this opportunity and let it go by?
Well, it was so brilliant and so exciting, amazing to see it on, you know, on TV for everyone. Even I've done a bit of coaching yesterday, and a couple of kids, you know, who weren't particularly into cricket at the start of the year, and I actually taught them at school. And this, she's a girl. She was 8 years old, and she was asking me, "What was your favourite part of it?" Oh, my favourite bit was when he did that frying pan scoop over, and that was the butler playing that scoop over towards fine leg, and she wanted to practice scoops. So we had soft balls, and she was ramping it over her head, and it's just the excitement. It was just amazing. But I think we just need to get kids in via. You can do numerous things. Kids love coloured kit, for example. They love playing in, because I'm a teacher, so, you know, they love seeing the coloured kit. They ask me, some of the kids at my school know that I play for Cambridge, and they're like, "Oh, what's your one day kit?" And I'm like, "Well, we only play one day anyway, but it's this blue one with yellow on it." And they just love it, and they love playing with the pink, you know, they're starting to play with pink ball. I do think that the league structure in certain areas just needs a slight improvement, I think, in terms of the T20 is just one day in the year. And I know that was a 50-over World Cup and it was brilliant, but children love the short form, and keeping 15, 16, 17-year-olds in, the keeping their attention, mm-hmm. you know, and their talent is probably so good, but that it's just, oh, it's a whole Saturday. The Premier League, for example, I'm getting up at 7 o'clock or 6:30 for away games, and getting home at 10 at night. And when you've got, you know, when your mates are all going to, I don't know, Glastonbury or whatever, as a 16-year-old,
makes you think twice.
Yeah, I do think you could, and I thought about this a few years ago when I was considering, you know, moving out of the Premier League, was they should have maybe a like block out. It's a bit like the champion, a bit like the professional game does. Yep. They block out red ball, and then you could do a white ball. Then you could do 3 weeks where, instead of a T20 day, which we have on one Sunday, and if you win that, then you get through to the next week, and it's on a Sunday, and the availability is a bit worse, and then there's county games as well. Do that all on three Saturdays in a row, so yeah. Every team plays each other, so you have four teams turn up on a day, or three teams on a day, and I think that would just be brilliant. And then you can have a proper, you know, you've got your full squad, because that's when people are mostly available on Saturdays, and people love T20, and maybe even, and I know that this is a bit left field, but if you've had guys open the batting or bat in the top three in the first game, do you have to pick another top three for the second game? Because a young guy who's 16 is going to watch the old seasoned vet going at number one, the overseas pro, and, you know, your young gun who's 20 years old.
Yeah.
And actually, in T20, you probably won't get a bat. So, but having to change it around, I mean, that's really random, but, you know, just something to get more opportunities for young kids.
Well, I was interested to hear, obviously, from doing the show this year, I was obviously assumed that the dropout in the game currently is going to be the youngsters. But speaking to lots of guys and throughout the season, it's often been the case that even guys now who are still playing the game at the top level, whether it be Whitings or EAPL, are considering leaving and stopping playing, because whether it be because of the time commitments or the travel. But it definitely does seem to be some sort of desire from players, especially to try and change it. I think the Whitings League will probably change next year because of the pure backlash that has been out of the number of the couple of teams dropping out or considering dropping out. So I think that will change. But I think just just changing it to a similar structure and changing nothing else is just changing the league, whether you have 9 teams or 10 teams, whatever, isn't going to do much for the game. It's got to all the way down to the culture, because I'm sure if you ask young kids, why don't you play cricket before probably Sunday, they'd say, well, because it's boring, it takes ages, and they'd just say it because it's the general things they pick up. So you have to change the culture. So if we're walking along the boundary in local villages and clubs around the country, are they going to be infused by seeing, older men in white gear taking ages to play a game of cricket? Or if there's some youngsters in there playing colour kits, pink balls, smacking the ball around, it might be slightly more interesting. I mean, Harry Gurney made the point at the start of the season that caused a lot of debate about all club cricket should be T20, T20 or the 100. And we all at the time said, no, don't be so ridiculous. But because I think there has to be a balancing act. In terms of, some people do want to play the longer format, but listening to the fact that so many in the top tiers of the game in Cambridgeshire actually don't really possibly want to play the game, it does, so that it just sort of makes you think twice, and we think will it change to T20 cricket? One competition that is also being downgraded is the 50 over competition. Seems bizarre considering England have just won the World Cup, which is of course a 50 over format. Being downgraded next year to a development competition, which will be played at the same time as the 100, which is the ECB's new competition. There's been a bit of backlash on that today. The counties have formed a new independent board called the Professional Game Board to try and win back some of the control, because the ECB promised the counties that they would have some control, but it seems to be slipping away from them. Obviously, that brings into the question whether we'll see a similar thing which we've seen in football in terms of the Premier League clubs, which they broke away from the FA to form the Premier League. Mm. Do you think something like this could happen, or do you think it's purely just to try and maybe send a message to the ECB?
You can see where they're coming from, because if you're a young, 22-year-old, you're trying to break your way into the first team of your county, and then at the 100, they draft players in, so they'll get Chris Gayle and people like that, and you're not going to get a look in. And actually, those 20-year-olds are probably the guys, the new Joss Butlers, and they're not, you're not going to be able to see them. And even if they go and score 100 in the sort of lower down league, it's hard to make a break if you've got guys like Owen Morgan will be playing it, and you're not going to drop Owen Morgan for a young Ollie Slack who's scored 100.
I don't know about that.
But you know what I mean. So it is difficult. It is difficult to get that balance right, I suppose.
And because like I say, the 100 is coming in, and it meaning the counties that the likes of the T20 Blast, which from my knowledge is one of the major profit-making competitions that the counties have. They make so much of their money from the T20 Blast, because a lot of counties struggle to get attendances at the four-day games, is being sort of marginalised towards the back end of the season or the start of the season. If you lose those 8 counties that don't have Test match ground status, and you just keep those 10 counties, that's going to damage the game. Surely that's going to mean that there are all these young kids coming through in those areas that are going to struggle. You're reducing the teams, and it's only going to attract the stars.
Well, when I used to play age group county cricket, the great team, some of the great teams were teams like Derbyshire, and they have all those players go through to go and play for Yorkshire, and if they're good enough, become stars. In my opinion, you need those counties. It's the backbone of, where would someone in our area go if they were looking for a county? If you only had the top, you've got Essex, but that means the pool of talent is going to be huge. Like, even it's hard to get a go at Northants or something like that. And the next place is Nottinghamshire, and if you got rid of Leicestershire, Derbyshire, it's just difficult. It'd be too difficult, and you get really talented guys at 16, and they wouldn't have a county. And I think some kids come through at their best when they're in their 20s after age group cricket. You've got to keep that age group cricket going, because it's too, some kids grow a bit more when they're a bit older.
Yeah, late developers.
So I think you just need to keep, the thing is keeping people in, volunteers, and people keeping people in to help run that cricket. That's the hardest thing. And I was thinking a little bit earlier about getting the young kids into the game. In state schools, it is hard to do that. I worked in a state school a few years ago, and if I didn't go and run cricket sessions, they wouldn't happen. So I did an after-school club, and you get a few kids go, and teaching the bowling action to an 8-year-old, if they've never done it before, is really hard. But if they don't get that from 7, 8 years old, and they try it when they're 13, they're going to think, oh, I'm rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting to the state schools who have now seen that game, although they're going into summer holidays now, but... You know, we have lots of great cricket camps around our area, but they cost a lot of they, you know, for some families cost a lot of money. So
yeah, and yeah. It's also worth mentioning about the longer format as well. If we do get rid of the counties and the county championship, then ceases to exist because you just get this city format, this city-based team system. Sorry, and you remove the county championship, then the test match team is no longer going to have a pool of players to pick from. For the test team, and it's all well and good saying how much we all love, obviously, the colour kits and everything after the World Cup, but let's not get carried away. We also love the 4-day game, the 5-day game, the longer format. And who's to say if a kid doesn't watch the World Cup on Sunday and then you explain to them there's more cricket available, you can play this type of cricket, and they really enjoy the longer format. It's making it more accessible, I think, to so many people, and with, like you said, state schools, and also trying to get it on free-to-air as well, along with that 8 million that watched on the weekend. It is something that the ECB have to capitalise on, whether they will.
If you get rid of the counties as well, and it's just cities, you think there's so many lovely, amazing cricket clubs that are leafy sort of county clubs.
Yeah.
You know? Some of the nicest grounds you'll ever play at are nowhere near a city, and you get players players from that village playing there. So it is something they've got to look at. But I think this platform they've got now must be. Just we've got to try and use it, and get kids are excited for it. It's the next step, and I'm not. It's hard to say what to do next, isn't it? But
yeah, well, it's easy, I guess, us as cricket fans sitting here talking about it on the Wednesday, 3 days after the game. Let's hope that some young kids are still talking about it to their parents and want to get involved. Anyway, after this break, we're going to be rounding up the EAPL.
From the Pavilion on Cambridge 105 Radio with Wispar, the mobile app that keeps you up to date with grassroots football in Cambridgeshire. To find out more, visit wispar.com.
Welcome back to From the Pavilion. Yeah, we've stopped playing the It's Coming Home song now. I got a bit bored of it. But we're going to move on and round up our EAPL sides now. And first up is Bowen Lexing opening bowler and a friend of the show, Sam Rippington. Are you there, Sam?
Hi, how you doing, Ollie?
Yeah, good, mate. You?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Good. And positive news this week. The one week Joe is not around to talk. He managed to get a win. First win, I believe, since around May time, and rocketed you up the table as well. But a good victory, 49-run victory over Copdop and Old Ipswich in.
Yeah, real good performance from the boys. Pretty flat deck at Mingay, so as everybody knows, tiny grounds, sort of flat deck. It's always good to get runs on board and then put pressure on the opposition, which we managed to do with the ball, so it was a really, really good day out.
Yeah, and incredibly, after sort of talking to Joe and it all seemed a bit doom and gloom over the last few weeks, you're now up to fifth in the table after that victory. Incredible.
Yeah, it's a funny one, actually, because, we've been a bit doom and gloom because we haven't managed to get any wins under our belts, but we've still managed to pick up points because we've ended up getting full batting points and getting teams 8 and 9 down, so we've still been walking away with nearly 20 points a game. So as long as the points are still ticking over, we're only ever sort of one or two wins away from getting ourselves at the table, which is always handy. So it's really good to see that we're fifth now, I think it is.
Yeah, exactly, fifth place. So Europa League, if it was Premier League. But it doesn't get any easier, really, for you. Frinton on sea on the weekend, top of the table. But I guess you try and use the momentum built from last week's win to get a victory again.
Yeah, I mean, Frinton are a strong side. They're packed full of sort of star players in terms of EPL lads. But we'll, again, we're playing at home, so home advantage. Playing at X-Teams also does a bit more, so there's always a chance of getting wickets early. I think if we can get into the middle order and sort of get through their star players at the top, we've got a chance of going through them. I know we played them last year at X-Teams, and they sharp shop and blocked out for the draw in the end. So if we can have the same sort of game we had last year, then it could be very interesting.
Yeah, hopefully so. And just a quick word on Cambridgeshire as well. Sounds like we're running out of time tonight, but there are two draws so far in the Championship against Norfolk and Cumberland. Another bit of a local derby this weekend against Bedfordshire at Willow's home ground, Wisbeach, on Sunday. So it'd be nice to get the first win on the board.
Yeah, I think for the boys it's very important to get a win on the board. Two decent results. Away at Cumberland's always tough, and obviously we don't want to lose to Norfolk. We managed to put ourselves out of the hole there. So get a win there would be fantastic on Sunday.
Yeah, well, hopefully so, Sam. Thanks for coming on, mate, and all the best for respective games on the weekend.
No worries at all. Thanks, Ollie. Cheers.
Cheers. Sam Rippington there, Bowen Lexing opening bowler. Got two for the price of one there. Talk about Cambridgeshire as well against Bedfordshire on the weekend. That gets underway on Sunday, a 3-day match. And Alex, just while I ring up your skipper, a good win for your boys on the weekend. A draw on the weekend, local derby, Saffron Walden.
Yeah, good result.
A good performance, nonetheless.
Yeah, a good performance. We needed to score some runs again, as I said a few weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we got rained off and we were 140 for two. So it was good to see the boys. I wasn't there at the weekend, I was away, but it was good to see the boys rack up a total. Just couldn't bowl them out. Saffron Walden's a good pitch. They got early wickets, but so they shut up for the draw quite quickly. So we couldn't. We were struggling to get the wickets. I think even Johnny Atkinson bowled, who I've just heard his first evening game over went for 20 runs this evening, which is always good to see.
Nice. So he'll probably be gutted, actually.
He will be. Livid.
He's usually doing wedding prep on a Wednesday night, which is why he comes on the phone. But also, he does like a bit of cooking on a Wednesday night.
That's definitely a lie. The boy cannot cook.
Okay. Well, let's speak to someone who was playing on the weekend for Cambridge Cricket Club. Of course, it was the skipper, Lewis Hill. Lewis, thanks for coming on the show.
No worries, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was just saying to Alex, really, sort of a bittersweet because a really pretty comprehensive performance, but just couldn't get the last couple of wickets against Saffron Walden. So 302 for 8 on the board in 64 overs, and then Saffron Walden were 159 for 8 to manage to bat out the draw.
Yeah, I think obviously it's disappointing not to get the couple of wickets at the end there, but there was a lot of positives to take away. As you could probably tell from us scoring 300, the wicket was pretty flat. So to take 8 wickets on it in the second innings was a pretty good effort.
Missing a key bowler, I reckon, Louis.
I think Jake was away. But we were unlucky, to be honest. We got a wicket off a no ball, and you know, there was a couple of sort of half chances which we didn't really take. But you know, it's good that we created those opportunities, and it's definitely a good result to sort of work off of. So, really pleased in that respect.
Yeah, and excuse the ignorance, but finding out the Vauxhall Mallards have been or will disband at the end of the season, what's the situation in terms of relegation then? Obviously, second bottom of the minute. Will it mean that no club goes down? Obviously, or there will, of course, be a playoff potentially between the two counties league and the Whitings and Partners top division?
Yeah, I mean, the honest answer is I don't know how that will look at the end of the season, to be honest, but it's probably not something that's been at the forefront of our minds as a team or my mind as a captain. I wouldn't expect us to be in that sort of battle or mindset at the end of the season. I think we've got enough good players and enough sort of form going into the second half of the season to win a few games and get ourselves towards the top half of the table and where we should be, really.
Yeah, and Horsford on Saturday then at home. What do you make of their season so far? How do you think you'll fare there?
Yeah, so Horsford are a decent team. Obviously, they've hit some form of late. They've got themselves to fourth, as you mentioned. So they'll always be tough. They've got some key players, like Marillier and Finley with the ball. So we're going to have to make sure we get our plans in place to give ourselves the best chance. But we did win the reverse fixture, so that's a lot of confidence to take from that going into a home game.
Well, thanks going on, Lewis, and all the best for the weekend. You'll have your gun bowler back as well.
three for the last time against them. Last time I took a wicket, probably. But.
Yeah, well, I look forward to it, lad.
Cheers, Lewis.
Cheers.
It's Lewis Hill, Cambridge Cricket Club captain, taking duties off Johnny Atkinson. He usually calls us, as Alex was saying. He's in action tonight. Any update on that? On Johnny's performance, or has he been taken off?
Apparently he bounced someone out, which is difficult because he bowls 63 miles an hour at best, and that's usually off a short pitch in the nets. So we'll see how he goes. I can keep you updated next week.
Okay, cool. But he's not much of a bowler by the sounds of what you're saying.
He likes to think so. He's all right. Yeah, he's actually the wedding prep will be over because he gets married actually next Friday. So
well,
very exciting times. So
otherwise he's lastminute.com.
Although yeah, he's missing Saturday. The Saturday fixture. But anyway,
unfortunate. Anyway, lastly on the APL. Ben Harris, we spoke a bit about the Saffron Walden game against Cambridge just a moment ago, but from the Saffron Walden perspective, Ben Harris joins us now. You well, Ben?
Yeah, evening, Ollie, you right?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Like I said, on the weekend, I imagine for you guys, it was a pretty good result, and they managed to battle it out and secure the draw.
Yeah, it was a good result, especially the position we were in. You know, a couple of key players short, which was frustrating. And then I think they got too many. I can't quite remember what we were, but for those boys to bat 35, 36 overs out for the draw while Mahir losing his wicket two balls before. But pretty heroic.
Yeah, brilliant stuff from you guys to manage to get some points from the match then. And this weekend against Great Witchingham. So a bit of a game where a six-pointer, if you were talking about it in football terms, really. A chance possibly to jump above them if you manage to get the win.
Yeah, exactly. I said that to the guys after the game. I said, look, you know, although we haven't had a great couple of results, you know, it's still, we're only a couple of wins away from being right in amongst it again. You know, the higher of the you know, middle clubs, as it were. I think those top clubs are long gone. But, you know, there's plenty to play for. There's a lot of games left and we've basically got to play everyone still, bar a couple of teams.
Mm.
So, yeah, a lot of work to be done, but, you know, we've plenty of room for improvement.
Yeah, certainly so. Thanks for coming on, Ben. Short but sweet tonight, I'm afraid, but thanks for coming on.
No worries. Cheers, Ollie.
Ben Harris there, Saffron Walden skipper. That is the APL ramp done. It's probably record time, but we managed to squeeze in a bit of chat at the end with Alex Sears, who's in the studio with us this evening, about the England versus Ireland test match back at Lord's on the 24th of July. So this time next week. The squad was announced and a couple of, I wouldn't say surprises, but uncapped players, Lewis Gregory, of Somerset, Ollie Stone of Warwickshire, and Jason Roy, of course, a name we all know from the one-day internationals. Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Definitely looking forward to seeing Jason Roy play. I think you struggle a little bit to pick players on first-class form now because we've done it so often over the years, and it's become a sort of a revolving door. Whereas Roy looks like he's got the. If he will go with hard hands, and he probably will nick off sometimes, but you've got to go with the talent and the metal he's got. You know, he's a star, isn't he? Mm. So,
just quickly on that, how will Dominic Sibley, who's averaging 63 in the championship, 450s and 300s, how will he feel when the selectors say going to churn out runs in the championship, he delivers and gets ignored?
Yeah, it is difficult for him.
Does it send a good message to the championship, which supposedly should be the feeder into the test match?
Well, I was having this conversation with Henry Campbell at my club and Johnny Atkinson, and we were saying about Jofra playing,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't have much first class experience, but I don't think I wouldn't pick him. I would have Archer in my side straight away, and I think with Roy, I would have him in straight away based on its international runs and international wickets, and I think. He's just got to keep going, Sibley, and I'm sure he'll get. I'm not sure if he's had a Lions go.
He did this week. Got 74 in the first.
So yeah, he's just got to keep banging the door down with that as well. Which is where the guys come in, don't they? From
yeah.
the Lions.
Well, supposedly meant to be like the right-handed Alistair Cook from guys who'd been watching a bit of county cricket. Some of the reporters. Lewis Gregory, 44 wickets at 13 this season. He's been the outstanding player in the county championship. Ollie Stone has been injured, of course, got called up into the test squad for, I think, the Sri Lanka, might have been the West Indies tours in the winter, but got injured on his return, got a 5 foot for Warwickshire, so good to see him back. Do you imagine any of those can make dents into the Ashes squad, or is it just to give them a bit of experience and a test cap?
You'd definitely think Ollie Stone's been in the frame before, and he's got that pace which they love to talk about, and it's great to have in your side, especially if Woody has got injured an intercostal muscle injury, so that can take a while to get going, get playing again. So, but if he goes, he hasn't. Had much bowling, and as a bowler you'd like to get a few weeks of bowling in, but if they get him into the Ireland test, then great and good for Ireland.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for this evening, Alex. Just to run through the honours board then from last week, Jamie Golan's Wisbech Town top of the bowling was 6 for 15, and the batting was dominated by Islam Thomas Griffin with 125 for that on Saturday, so keep up the good work, scoring lots of runs, taking lots of wickets. Alex, thanks very much for coming in.
No worries. You're, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, replacing Guesty as a
just about cooled down after my run here from Mill Road.
You can get refreshed on the way home. But thanks very much for listening, and remember to download the podcast. And we'll be back next Wednesday. See you then.
Cambridge 105 Radio.